this week on The Inside Flap.
You know, I was really weird by the time I got to the end of this book. There were places when I wasn't actually sure which places I had actually been in person.
Oh, wow.
Which places I had been on Google Maps, because I spent so much time on Google Street View. Started to sort of blur the bounds of reality a little bit.
You knew I was a teacher, a theater teacher? Mm-hmm. You're like, who's your favorite actor? I'm like, Robert De Niro is what the first name that popped. And a great actor. Oh, yeah, De Niro, sure. You know, I like that Kevin Spacey.
What?
I'm not like.
What?
I'm like,
has he heard? The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. We are joining you on this Inside Chat edition of the Inside Flap. Thank you for joining us. We have a great show.
I don't know how you get that out. Inside Chat edition of the Inside Flap.
Inside Chat. I'm a pro. Look it up. P-R-O. Professional Inside Chat edition of
The Inside Flap.
We do have a great show for you today. We don't have Andrew this week. He'll be back with us next week as once again he is, well, no, you know what? He was playing Mr. Mom week long.
To get the full effect of like what moms feel like with three kids, he also has had a bad cold.
I think I'm coming down with a cold.
Yeah, he's had a bad cold. Andy's like dropping kids off and doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he was telling me, by the time you drop one kid off at the bus stop, it's time to go pick up the other one.
It is true. He was running around. He called me to check on me this week,
nice,
which was very nice. And he was at the storage unit.
Was he?
Yes.
Dropping off the life size. I'm sure they just went to, I'm looking forward to hearing all about it.
That's why he
was there. They went to the convention
there
for the animatronics. No, he said they didn't buy any more animatronics.
He might have told me and I might have forgotten, or he might have just said he was at the storage unit and I made some assumptions.
That's true. Maybe. Who the hell knows what's going on with him? But we'll get to the bottom of that. We do have a great guest for you. We're joined by a New York Times bestselling author, Deborah Crombie, author of the Duncan Kincaid and Gemma James series. Her latest is A Killing of Innocence, and it is number 19 in the series. Oh, 19. You know, that's my lucky number,
that
don't
is,
you
yeah,
know?
I forget.
That's right. Remember, I put a dime when I was a wee lad at a Catholic, what was it, like a Catholic, not a carnival, but like a...
What do they call those?
It was half gambling. It was about as close as you get to gambling.
Yeah.
It was a big fair, like a festival.
In the basement of the church, right?
Yeah, and also in the parking lot. I do remember being in the parking lot. My grandmother's Catholic church. I was like 5 years old. I put a dime on number 19, won a cake.
Mm.
And so if you're out there, you might be able to figure out my password, actually, now that I think about it. To this day, that is my number. So anyway, we had a great chat with Deborah, and we'll have that conversation for you in just a second. But first, listen, hit us up. By the way, if you're looking for a used car, hit us up, as we are now selling, what year is that? We got a
2011?
A 2011.
Yeah.
Is that right? Uh-huh. Okay, 2011 Volvo.
We're not turning into this. We're not.
No, I just thought, it's you know, pertinent to the story I'm going to tell.
So I
took this car. And if you want to know what it is, it's the same one Edward Cullen drove in Twilight. So we're hoping the market is hot for this baby. So I took it, and we were like, all right, let's get it, let's sell it. But of course, let's get it detailed before we sell it. You know, got a little, you know, it was looking kind of rough on the inside. So we'll take it to this guy. And we just looked it up online. I'm not going to give I'm not going to tell you the name of the place. For reasons why you'll figure out why in a second. But he did a fine job on it. But the point is this, we got it over there. We've had many snowstorms, so it stayed there for a while because I didn't want to. It's only front wheel drive, so it does not operate very well in the snow.
It's fine in the snow if you're interested. I drove it for over 10
That's
years.
That's true. This is true.
I did all this around town, and I drive to people's homes for my job.
Well, and I think part of the reason why we didn't want to pick it up because we didn't have to want
it. It just gets gross.
Yeah, we got it cleaned and everything looking nice. Didn't want to drive it back. So the guy had it for about a month, literally 3 weeks. 3 weeks, I would say, the guy had it there. And finally, and we're going back and forth with him. He's like, it's fine. It can stay in my shop here. It's fine. I got plenty of space. All right, fine, whatever. Finally, I texted him. I said, I'm going to pick it up on Thursday. Got a message. Great. Okay, come by and get it. So I go by Thursday after school, swing by there, had you. And I, of course, we had to go that whole deal where I come home. You drive me over there, drop me off. I go in there. Well, he's not there. Some other guy's in the shop, and I'm looking at the car, and I look, he's got the passenger side is open, and there's mud, literally mud, right on the, where you step into the car, on the passenger side. I'm like, all right, this car is not ready. And yeah, the guy looked at me, said, yeah, this car is not ready. I said, I can tell there's mud on it. I didn't say that, but quickly I called you back, had you come pick me up. I messaged the guy like, what's going on? All right, it's just a few quick little things. You come by and get it tomorrow. I'm like, great, fine, I'll pick it up on Friday. Next day rolls around, Friday, same deal. Come here, you take me up there, drop me off. I go in, this time the owner is there. Ah, yes, come on in. Great. Can you what? And I walk in and there's the car right there. It looks great. And he says, you want to sit down? I said, what? No,
what?
I don't want. Yes, seriously. I said, no. And the guy is a chatty Cathy. Like, you know, right. I told you that the first time I went over there, he took me back in his office with the picture of him and Donald Trump in his office. He's a very, very talkative guy. I said, no, I don't need to sit down. I just need to get the car. He said, oh yeah, well, I just got to finish up a few quick things. You sure you don't want to sit? You sure? Here, come here. And then he like wheels over, he grabs this chair on wheels, like dusts it off, you know, with his hand, like, here, just take a load off. Can I get you something to drink? Like, no, I'm fine. And I had to lie to him because he asked me three times. I said, I just had a Coke on my drive home. I literally had to lie to him so I wouldn't give me a beverage. Because I don't want to get comfortable. I just want to get the car and go home. So he sits me down and then he grabs his own rolly chair and he's like, I'm just going to buff this out real quick. So then he goes around and he puts the buffing solution all over the he hadn't even buffed the car yet.
Oh.
Which we paid for. So as he's doing now, here's the thing. If he's just gonna buff it out, it's a small car. If he wants to buff it out real quick, fine, no problem. But here's what he does. He grabs the thing, he buffs out for 2 seconds, or he wipes the solution on for 2 seconds, then he stops and he turns to me and then he starts talking. He's got a variety of opinions on the first thing, and this is what kind of threw me for a loop. He knew I was a teacher, a theater teacher. Mm-hmm. He's like, who's your favorite actor? I'm like, okay. Oh. And he does not continue to work while asking me this. No, he stops. He's got the rag in one hand, the buffing compound on the other hand. Oh. Who's your favorite actor?
How old is he?
My age.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit
younger.
Sorry,
he was turning into like Milford Bradley somebody with a voice on his side.
He's a bald fella, so a little hard to, you know, kind of get a hold of.
Because you can't tell if there's gray or not,
right? Exactly. He might be, he's probably like in his mid-40s, to be honest with you. He's a little bit younger than me. Yeah. I'm like, Robert De Niro is what I, first name that the pop, and a great actor. Oh yeah, De Niro, sure. You know, I like that Kevin Spacey.
What?
I'm not like.
What?
I was like,
has he heard?
Okay.
Did you tell him?
I didn't say anything, but here's the deal. He knew all about Kevin Spacey because he goes, you know, they just cleared his name, right? I'm like, I didn't know that. He's like, yeah, so-and-so was lying all about it. It was all a lie. Can you believe that? The guy was lying.
Weren't there multiple so-and-sos?
Yeah, there's like 17 so-and-sos because I looked it up. There's many so-and-sos.
Yeah, I would have looked it up too because I'd be
young boys too.
Oh,
I know,
Dave. It's not a pretty story.
Persona non grata.
It's bad.
And this is the guy.
Is he in jail or is he overseas?
He's on trial. I mean, he's on trial. I believe his own trial. I forgot already. Huh. There's a the guy. Yeah, it's disgusting. But that's the guy he's going to hang his hat on. From? Kevin Spacey. Innocent Kevin Spacey.
That's weird.
Yeah. So then, and then I got to hear all about his business ventures. He's starting his idea is to have something wings and wax. You get your car waxed and get a thing of
that's
wings.
Okay. We've had a lube and latte.
Lube and latte.
It's been wanting to open for about 5 years now.
His is wax and wings. I guess he's got a location in Denver he's looking at.
Really?
Yeah. What else? I pretended to. You can see I've got a list of things that he talked about. I was pretending to text. After a while, I was like, I gotta write this stuff down. I got his opinions all about the EPA. Nothing good. what else? His education. He went on and on about his education. Culinary school. He went to culinary school. I'm a trained chef. You know, I'm a trained chef.
Huh.
As he's buffing out the car. He's talking about something about a lesbian dance competition. It was coming fast and furious. Legal loopholes, how to be a lawyer without going to law school. He was telling me about that. It was just on and on and on. And then when he finished buffing, then he grabs the, he's like, all right, I'm just going to do the windshield real quick. And then he does the winch, and then he does the windows, and he gets inside the car. He's getting inside the car. He's spraying the tire. I was there for 45 minutes. 45 minutes at least. I lost track of time. I've lost a little bit of my sanity and my mind being there.
That is insane.
Especially after all the Kevin Spacey. He led to lead with that.
Wow.
The sorely misunderstood and great
I've never
actor,
heard
Kevin
anyone
Spacey.
Defend Kevin Spacey.
Oh, of course.
Doesn't
you
it
haven't.
Make you wonder if there's some like real right wacko podcaster perhaps that might be
100%.
100%. But why Kevin Spacey of all the people to hang your hat on?
I don't know. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's a strange one.
Yeah, that is a strange one.
There's a lot of others that you might support.
Right.
But you don't support Harvey Weinstein. And as far as I know,
Weinstein,
you really...
Either one of those.
Oh, really? Yeah. How do you pronounce it?
Isn't the Weinstein? Weinstein. I don't know. Huh. I think it's Weinstein. I don't know.
It's Stein, though. It's not Stein as a last name.
No, yeah, but it can be pronounced either way.
Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein.
Huh.
Anyway,
you say Stein. Okay, I say Stein.
But then, and then I got home, you know, we're looking for the registration as we're getting ready to sell it. And he had given me like this Walmart plastic bag with all the detritus.
I'm a little nervous about that.
He found in there. And it was the registration of somebody that lives in Aurora.
And drives a Land Rover.
I've got the whole book, you know, the car manual that comes with the Land Rover.
What about our book?
Our book is in the car.
Oh.
He grabbed someone else's. I don't know. I don't know why. I've been meaning to return that to him, so I'll make a note of that and return that. So if you live in Aurora and you're driving a Land Rover and you drop your car off to get a detail at this crazy guy's place... I don't want to go during business hours, you know, and tomorrow morning I'll just like drop it off on the doorstep.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I don't want to have to deal with that guy. And then the guy's asking me, when's the play? He wants to come to the play.
What?
And then he's telling me, full disclosure, I took the car around the block a couple of times to see how it drove. You know, I like to have, sometimes we have loaner cars, so I might be interested in buying this. What are you selling it for? And I'm just like, I don't know. I got to look at the comps. So, yeah, he drove it around.
Was he driving it around town?
I don't know. There was mud on it.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you, it is a fun car to drive. It is a very easy car to drive.
Mm-hmm. And if you're out there listening, it had the engine replaced at 50,000 miles. That's all he got. So that engine
has about... That's what I famously cried on the phone to Geico.
61,000. Yeah, because we hit
tears of joy.
On a
I cried.
Dirt road, and it busted out the oil pan.
It ruined the engine.
We spilled oil all the way down the dirt road until it stopped driving. All right. Enough of that.
Sunnier days.
Let's get to it. We got Deborah Crombie is on the show now. Her 19th in the Kincaid and James. Easy for me to say. Her 19th in the Kincaid and James series. The title of that is, of course, A Killing of Innocence. In this book, Someone is running around England stabbing women. And no, this is not a Jack the Ripper story. This is a, it's set in the historic, London's historic Russell Square. So basically, a woman is stabbed to death. And when Kincaid gets to the crime scene, he is stunned to realize that the woman who is stabbed is a woman he just saw in the pub while he was having a drink along with his sergeant, Doug Cullen. Quickly, he enlists the help of his wife, Gemma, who is now on a task force on knife crime. She joins up in the investigation along with her partner, D.S. Melody Talbot. This is a fast-paced, entertaining mystery with many POVs. A lot of POVs, which I really love. Keeps things interesting and just the action flowing. I was not familiar with this series, but I had no problem whatsoever jumping right in with this one, and I found it very engaging. Enjoyed this one. This is definitely a series I'll be dipping into. And this one, again, is called A Killing of Innocence. So here to talk all about it is Deborah Crombie. Because you had to be a big shot.
In Denver, it is 5 degrees here right now. It is so cold. Yeah, I'm not dressed up for you. I've got layers of clothes. I've got a blanket on my lap.
It's cold. It is bad. It's really bad.
I took my warm hoodie off in case I needed to look a little bit more professional.
We don't go for that professionalism nonsense around here. No, purely shtick.
We have talked to writers in their jammies before, so it's fine.
One guy, who was I talking to, got up to pull a book off the shelf. He was wearing like a collared shirt, and then he got up and he had like, it could have been boxer shorts. It looked like boxer shorts and socks as I watched him walk across the room to grab the book. I'm like, okay, all right.
You gotta be really careful about that stuff.
I have
on big baggy fleecy sweatpants and big wool fleece lined reading socks. That I bought in Toronto at VoucherCon a couple of years ago.
Very nice. We want our guests to be comfortable. That's the most important thing. We want everybody to be comfortable and having a good time. So that's what we're going to aim for today. We'll see how it goes. You can let us know.
Or not.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. I just loved your latest Kincaid and James book, A Killing of Innocence. Now, listen. This is a tale of stabbings, forced carrot drinks, and creepy clay dolls. Deborah, what was it that inspired you to write this latest installment in the series?
Well, since I moved Duncan, because Gemma and Duncan are not working together on the same team anymore.
Since I know.
Married, and that made it a little bit difficult. And I had moved him to Holborn, which is in Bloomsbury, and it's such an interesting part of London that I had wanted to set a book there. That's one of the reasons I moved him to Holborn, and so it just kind of grew out of that.
I see.
So when you decide to move a character and you want to do a part of London, are you like future travel plans thinking about do you have a place
always in-
Okay, yeah. And what is it, Bloomsbury? I'm trying to think. I should know. What makes it special, though, to you?
Oh, it's the British Museum and all that has lots and lots of literary history with the Bloomsbury Group. And there's Dickens and Darwin associations and just all kinds of fun stuff. A lot of stuff I thought I would cover more in this book, and then it just didn't. You can't always get everything in that you think you're going to get in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the story kind of twists in ways that you don't expect.
That's probably true. Did you travel to London recently? Have you traveled there recently?
I was there in October, but that's the tale about this book, because I had just started the research for this book in October of 2019 when I was there for about almost a month. And came back the day before Thanksgiving and was planning another trip probably in spring. And then we all know what happened.
Yeah.
And I just, it was so hard writing this book without the feet on the ground research. And I'm hoping that it doesn't read like a whole lot of it was done on Google Maps.
We can't tell. I can never tell.
One can't tell. If you're a good enough writer, you can make us believe whatever you want us to believe. So, I mean, never.
Well, you know what was really weird? By the time I got to the end of this book, when I was reading copy edits and page proof, there were places when I wasn't actually sure which places I had actually been in person.
Oh, wow.
Which places I had been on Google Maps, because I spent so much time on Google Street View.
Wow.
It started to sort of blur the bounds of reality a little bit.
That's a little bit scary, Deborah.
Yeah.
Do you ever think like, oh, there's a kebab place where I wanted to put a bookstore? Do you ever change things up, or do you try to be faithful so that like if we went to England and walked the street, we'd be like, okay, that's where that is?
I try to be pretty faithful.
Yeah.
I mean, I will change things to protect the innocent.
Sure.
For instance, the hospital that is part of the story in A Killing of Innocence is not real.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Made it up, and I put it in a spot which is actually I think it's a University College London residence hall where I put the fictional hospital, because, you know, for obvious reasons, I didn't want to use a real hospital and have fictional staff be confused with real staff.
Yeah.
So I will change things like that, but generally not. Like, for instance, the Italian deli where Duncan gets a sandwich is a real place.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay.
Which I haven't actually been to.
That's so cool.
I have been to the Jazz Club and the Pizza Express in Dean Street.
Oh, that's cool. That's funny.
What about the fancy places where they serve the 4-carat drinks? I mean, did you visit any upscale swanky joints like that?
Oh, I had, you know, obviously this was the worst of lockdown when you couldn't go out, you couldn't go anywhere, and you know, no bars, no restaurants. And so I had a terrific time looking at all these London cocktail bars and menus for fancy cocktails. And so the bar is not actually a real place, but it's based on sort of a combination of a lot of different fancy London cocktail bars.
Gotcha.
And there actually was one with 4-carat.
So weird. I mean, it's like they don't know. It's like, how do you make it to the next level? Oh, I know. Let's throw in something that nobody likes into a drink, or something that nobody has even heard of. And that way it's got to be good. You know, I think that's how that works. Now, Deborah, one of the hardest things I would imagine about writing a long-running series is keeping it fresh. And you continue to evolve this series, you do, by doing things like adding another kid for Kincaid and Gemma to look after, which is continued here.
Thanks.
Are you always kind of looking for ways to grow your characters in fresh and interesting ways? And you got like a little list that you keep
handy? How does that work? Not really. I'm usually thinking of maybe a book or two ahead at changes in the ongoing storyline that might make things interesting. But a lot of the big things, like Kit's introduction to the family and Charlotte's introduction to the family, they sort of grew out of the storyline of the book.
Mm.
I mean, when I started writing Necessary as Blood, I didn't know that was how it was going to turn out.
Oh, okay. So it just happened organically like that.
Yeah.
You're not an outliner then, it sounds like. Not a big outliner?
I actually am. I mean, I usually have a pretty good idea where I want a book to go. I've never written a book where I didn't know who the killer was. And I usually have general ideas for the ongoing storyline, but I outline pretty specifically a couple of, oh, maybe 2-3 chapters at a time, like scene by scene outline. But I don't sit down and outline the whole book. But I can't, I am not a pantser. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine starting out to write a really complicated multi-viewpoint story and not have some idea where it's going. Yeah. And I have friends who do. And
More power to them, right? And this book does have a lot of multiple viewpoints. Is that something you enjoy doing? Does it keep it... keeps it interesting for the reader. I enjoy hearing from all the different viewpoints. Does it keep it interesting for you?
I think that's one of the reasons that the series has stayed fresh is because of it stayed fresh for me because I get to write from a lot of different character viewpoints.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it would be hard to carry on a series this long and only be writing a single character.
I have heard that from writers who they said they didn't know any better and they started writing in first person. Mm. And then it turned into this long series and they're like, what have I done?
Well, the timeline is interesting too when you get into a long series. And my books have kind of floated. You know, the first book in this series, I'm just kind of flabbergasted. February 3rd, I think it will be 30 years.
Wow. Congratulations. Wow. That's awesome.
I can't even conceive of how this happened.
Oh. It's wild.
It would be nice if I'd written 30 books.
Yeah, you're not quite a once a year, but that's okay. I mean, we all write at our own pace. We wouldn't want you to rush it and lose the quality of them, for goodness sakes, you know?
That is nuts. When you first got, you know, your publicist or whoever was like, hey, they want to do this book, they're excited. Was it one of those like, hey, they want more books out of it? Were you like, oh, good? Or was it, oh, boy?
No, I knew I wanted to write a series.
Okay.
When I sold the first book, I was already, maybe more than halfway through the second one, All Shall Be Well. But I started out with a series in mind, and because I loved British detective novels, and I thought really seriously with the first couple of books about how I wanted to handle time, because you know if you age your characters in real time, you end up like Ian Rankin did with having to retire Rebus.
Right.
Or you go the other way, like Sue Grafton, who sort of kept Kinsey in,
Kinsey was always,
in the same decade, and I didn't want to do that. So I sort of based mine on the way P.D. James did her books, which was that the Dalgleish novels were always contemporary, and the characters, you know, they did progress. They did have changes in their lives, but it wasn't. So in my series time, it's only been about 5, maybe 6 years now, but every book is contemporary.
Yeah.
And that's something you really thought about. That's great.
Well, if you go back and you read the early books and, you know, Duncan has a cell phone that's attached to the car.
Oh, okay.
People have pagers. There are anachronisms in there, but I don't know any way to, go back and fix that.
Do you ever make any mistakes with like backstories of a character? And then you get, these readers who are, probably know your stuff even better than you do, correcting you. No, that aunt was dead in book 4.
I keep waiting for that to happen. Especially now, with this new book coming out, and I'm getting all these emails and messages from readers saying, oh, I'm going back and, I'm rereading the whole series again.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, golly, somebody's going to catch me out on something because I never seem to sit down and just reread the whole series all the way through.
But I'll reread this. You don't have like a Bible to reference Or is this just, you just keep it all up here in your head?
Oh, now I'm really cringing. No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I should have known better, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, come on.
Some books and started that, but I didn't.
She doesn't need to, dude.
Clearly doesn't need to. If you're this many books in and readers haven't let you know, you must be doing something right. You got it. You know, it's that steel trap mind of yours. So, you know, well done. Yep. Do you do a lot of research for these books? You know, Gemma and Duncan, they're foster parents now. Do you have to do like a lot of research about that?
I haven't done as much research about that as I should. And I'm going to have to, I've done some, but I'm going to have to deal at some point with the actual adoption
right.
process. And so I'm going to need to make some contacts and really explore how that's done.
Do you prefer doing research that way by like talking to a real person? Like, do you have like an officer on hand at your beck and call to get any?
Oh, I wish. I did actually when I first started writing the series. I had some UK police officers that were really helped, read the books, and were really helpful. But they've all retired.
Well, perfect. So, now they got nothing but time to read your books. And
That's true. And then Gemma and Sedona, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
In the book, they do a little bit of undercover work. They go to an upscale bar, you know, to get some information. They go so far as to create a little backstory for themselves. How much backstory do you create for these new characters as you write? Or do you just kind of not fill them in as much? Do you let them be a little loose for yourself?
It's kind of organic. They kind of evolve as I'm writing them. That scene with Gemma and Jasmine at the bar, I think was my favorite scene in the entire book. I had so much fun writing that.
That was fun.
Jasmine Sedona has been one of the characters that I've really wanted to explore in the last couple of books. And I think she's really interesting. And I know a lot more of her backstory than we get in this book. We get some little hints and we find out some stuff about her family. And but I know some things that I think we're going to find out in subsequent books.
A little tease there. So here's one question I'm kind of curious about. Tell me about this one. I know, and this would vary from author to author, but how do you feel about it? So earlier in the novel, you got Melody and Kincaid, and they're in someone's house and they're conducting an interview, and Melody just happens to look over and notice a book in the room, and you name the book, which is The Chalice by Phil Rickman, and it's just a little throwaway, whatever. Have you ever wanted to, like, if I was an author, I would like put one of my books in there, you know what I mean? Just for like a fun little Easter egg. Have you ever done anything like that or wanted to, you put the Easter eggs in your book? What do you do there, Deborah?
I've never put any of mine, but there actually is another book Easter egg in A Killing of Innocents, because I'm a huge fan of the Rivers of London series by Ben Aronovich.
You did. Yeah. They used to say you mentioned something about magic policemen. Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
So
yes.
Duncan and Kit are reading Rivers of London.
That's right. You did do that. Yeah. He's a great
I've just read the first book. I love that book.
It's my favorite series. I absolutely love them. I have them all. I have the graphic novels. I have them all on Audible. If you want to listen to the narrator, whose name is, he's a British black actor named Cobden Holbrook Smith. Mm. He's done Shakespeare. He did Hamlet with David Tennant, and you'll see him in a lot of TVs and movies. But he has the best voice.
Does he?
So if you like the books and you want to go on with the series, I would highly recommend the audio.
Excellent.
Great. Yeah, because that first book, I love that first book. Yeah, that's great. I'd forgot all about it. You know, with a podcast, we read all the time.
Yeah. Well, I love these books for so many different reasons. His character development is great as the series goes on. And, you know, and just all that wonderful detail about London and geography and history and myth. I think they're a huge fun.
Yeah, he's a fun guy too. I got a chance to talk to him. He is a fun guy to talk to. Now, let me ask you this. Now, I stumbled across this website. Well, I followed the link off your website. But the Jungle Red Writers, there's a website maintained by female crime writers, and you contribute to it. How did this come about? Is that something you enjoy? I hope you enjoy doing it. You seem to.
Oh, yeah, we are seven female crime writers, yes. Although we write in all different sorts of crime novels. Hank Philippi Ryan is their sort of domestic suspense, and Hallie Efron's are, I guess you would say, domestic suspense, and Reese Bowen writes British historical, and then series and standalones, and then another series that's set in America with an Irish immigrant, the Molly Murphy book, and Jim McKinley writes several different theories and standalones, and Lucy Burdett writes the cozy series set in Florida. Julia Spencer Fleming is sort of really traditional mysteries set in upstate New York. Who have I left out? Was that six?
I think you got them all. Yeah.
You got them all. Yeah. They're all, like, almost all of them I've heard of or read their mm-hmm. books.
Yeah. We blog every single day.
Wow.
So there are seven of us that we rotate weeks.
Once a week. Once a day.
Yeah. We rotate weeks of being in charge of the blog. Oh. But we all try to comment every day and repost and, you know, be interactive. Mm-hmm. With the blog, and I've been doing it for 11 years. Sorry about that.
Oh, who you want to? Do you need to get that? Who's at the door?
Before the snowstorm, ice storm.
Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like we're sending it your direction because it's miserable.
Miserable here. Absolutely miserable. Yeah. The worst.
Oh, really funny.
Anyway, I've been doing Jungle Red for I think it's 11 years this month.
Wow, really?
No, or maybe it's 12. I'd have to go back and count.
You guys ever get together in person, or have you ever gotten together in person?
Yeah. I think the last time we were all together was at VoucherCon in Dallas in 2019. So
you're due for another.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be signing in Scottsdale on this coming Saturday, the 4th, and so I'm going to hang out with Reese. Jen won't be there because she's going to be out of town for a family thing, but.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, we all try to see each other whenever we can.
So do you have any interesting writing quirks that you employ as you sit down to write?
Not really. I like pen and paper. Does that count?
Oh, yeah, that does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm a fountain pen nut.
Really?
Oh, wow. So you write it out longhand?
No, but I like to take notes and just sort of idea journaling and idea naps and stuff like that. And then, you know, when the writing is really going well on a book, I carry a notebook around just to jot down, you know, I'll get a little bit of dialogue or part of a scene or especially right before I go to bed at night.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I have learned over the years that if, you know, especially if you're kind of in that sleepy state and you get an idea and you think, I'll remember this in the morning, you won't.
Right. Yeah.
If you think you have an idea, you need to write it down.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Sometimes just the act of writing something down helps you remember. You never have to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you always want to be a writer? So when you were like maybe a preteen and what kind of books were you reading? And did you think, were you writing stories at that age or was it something that didn't seem possible?
I wrote poetry.
Oh, yeah.
I started writing poetry when I was about, I don't know, 14 and wrote all the way through high school and up through college. But I didn't have any big ambitions to be a novelist. I actually had an uncle who was a very well-known Texas writer named A.C. Green. And he was a journalist, novelist, columnist, wonderful writer, but I grew up listening to my aunt and uncle say nobody in their right minds would ever try to make a living as a writer, which is probably true. But
that is not probably true. It's definitely true. And having spoke to you, I can say you're not in your right mind. So, you know, there's that. All right, Deborah, it is now. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote short stories. I actually think I sent some off in my 20s to things like Woman's World, but they were sort of literary fiction type.
Oh, really?
Stuff. Huh. Yeah. And I didn't really ever have an idea for writing a novel until my first husband is Scottish, and we had lived in Scotland and England and come back to the States, and I was so homesick for England. So that the first book really grew out of that, about wanting to be back in my head.
Gotcha.
I can see that. Yeah. That's a great device too, right? For something that you want. Yeah, that's good.
Still works.
Yeah.
All right, Deborah, it is time now for our segment that we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
We're watching Lockwood & Co. On Netflix.
Are you enjoying that?
Yeah. We're three episodes into it, and it's really fun.
Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, British ghost hunters.
Oh, wow. You can't go wrong with either one.
Yeah. You
can't go wrong with either one of those. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh, now that's harder.
Get harder as we go along.
I don't know. Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Middle Earth? Okay. Great one.
Yeah.
How about this, Deborah? Give us one. Give us a top five favorite movie of yours. One of your top five favorite movies of all time.
I love The Holiday.
Oh yeah, yeah. I like that too. Yeah.
I make my husband watch it every New Year's Eve.
Yes. Well, the set.
How does he feel about that?
Oh, he groans. But he actually likes it too. Yeah. So I just think the screenwriting was so clever and the casting was so great and just really, nice. Really fun.
Great.
I love that one too. It's the set design.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I want that cottage.
I want that cottage. So the house in LA wouldn't be bad either.
I would be nice too. I would not turn my nose down on that.
The set design in that movie is fabulous. And the score is fabulous. It's by Hans Zimmer, who's my favorite film composer. And it's my favorite of all of his scores. Yeah. So.
You know, I was so busy watching the set design that I don't know that I even noticed the score. I have an excuse to watch it again.
Watch it again. So, yep.
Yeah. How about this? How about one of your top five favorite books?
Well, I've already said Rivers of London.
That's right. No, you can't use that one again. Not allowed to use that again. No, that's against the rules. Sorry.
Possession by A.S. Byatt.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great book.
A great mix with the poetry that's in there, too. Mm. Yeah. Man, I like that.
Yeah, I aspired to write that one.
Yeah, that is
that's one of those you say, wow, I wish I'd written that.
Yeah.
I am definitely, I will tell you now, I am not smart enough to have ever written that.
Not me either.
No, you might have a chance at it.
You at least have a fighting shot at it. How about this, Deborah? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No.
No.
No. Can't sing.
Oh.
Can't remember lyrics. No. Gotcha. No.
Okay. All right.
Everybody would run screaming from the room.
Well, we wouldn't want that.
Going for the mic. Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
What am I reading? I'm reading an ARC by my friend who's writing as Celeste Connolly called Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Lord.
Oh, wow. That's
great. Out next year.
All right.
Okay.
Well, actually, it'll be out this year, I think, in the fall. So.
Cool.
Cool.
And I'm listening to books in C.J. Archer's Glass and Steel series, which I'd never run across before, and they're really fun on Audible.
Cool.
It's great.
Yeah, I love a good audio book. All right, Deborah, we loved your book, A Killing of Innocence. The series continues, and thanks so much for
spending some time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Stay warm.
Yeah.
Hopefully the storm isn't too bad.
Well, you know, if we get freezing rain in Texas, we will be housebound. So I'm just hoping I can get on the plane to Phoenix on Friday.
Oh, yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Yeah. Sure. We don't lose power. But stay warm.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying.
Yeah. Yep. Bye. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. That was so much fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Deborah Crombie for joining us. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. Tell a friend. Tell a friend. And, you need to get your car detailed. Don't look in Littleton. That's all I got to say. All right. Until next time, my name is Dave Medicus. We'll see you later.
Adios.
I'm not dressed up for you.